As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses.
Season 19, Episode 11. This is Writing Excuses.
A close reading on voice, an overview, and why we chose Time War.
15 minutes long.
Because you're in a hurry.
And we're not that smart.
I'm Mary Robinette.
I'm Dong Wan.
I'm Aaron.
And I'm Howard.
So this episode is the first of our close reading series. And I'm very excited to dig into this one. We've chosen for our first module here to focus on the aspect of voice in fiction. And we thought, what better book than that than Max Gladstone and Amal El-Mukhtar's This Is How You Lose the Time War. This was a novella that was published in 2015 that features two alternating voices from two different POVs and a series of letters written between them. It won a bunch of awards. It's been very popular. And I think the voice in this book is very distinct and very powerful. And much of the charm of the book is in how these two writers are approaching these characters and how the voice is coming through.
There's also the elephant in the room, which is when I got this book out to reread it and showed it to my 22-year-old and told them, I think you might like this book a lot. They said, yes, Bigelus Dickelus said the same thing. I will get to it eventually. And they will get to it eventually because I'm going to bring this copy back and shove it in front of them. Yes, this book got huge props in, was it 21, 22?
It was the, oh my gosh, what is 23?
I do not remember.
It's 23.
Summer 23. 23.
Summer yeah. 23.
This is, I mean, we're recording this in fall of, or in December of 23, so. Yeah.
It was this summer.
It was this year?
It won all of the awards when it came out, and then it was rediscovered by Bigelus Dickelus, and now is a phenomenon sweeping the globe.
Part of the reason it's doing that is that the voice is so strong and so it speaks to a lot of people. And I think voice is the reason it does that.
So I want to just point something out that as we're talking about voice, and that the voice of this is one of the things that is so important, but voice is also one of those wiggly words that we use a lot. And I find that it tends to mean three different things. There's the mechanical voice, which is like the style, you know, first person, third person, the mechanics of it. There's the aesthetic voice, what it sounds like, and then there's the personal voice, which is what the author brings to it. We are primarily going to be focusing on the aesthetic and mechanical voice when we're talking about this, in part because we don't know which parts which author wrote, so it's harder to pin down and say, this is because of their life experience.
They have said who wrote which parts.
Oh, they have now.
Yeah.
For a long time, they refused to.
Oh. I'm pretty sure that's public. So I have the other elephant in the room is that I have a particularly inside perspective on this book because the first two books we've chosen, I swear to God, I did not do this on purpose. I did not suggest these are both books that I have worked on as a literary agent. So Max and Amal are both my clients, and I've worked on Time War since its inception. So I have a little bit of inside perspective and sometimes filtering out what is public and what is not.
Drop
is
the knowledge, Dong Wan.
But I will very gladly give a few peeks behind the curtain when I can.
Yeah, double check with them on that one.
I will. Yeah.
So for me, one of the things that struck me immediately the first time I started reading this was that there was a poetic denseness to the language that you see less often in science fiction. It's, you know, I can think of other examples, but the poetic denseness was one of the things that pulled me in and also slowed me down because I felt like I needed to savor the book as I was going through, that the language, the voice itself was as important as the plot, that it was inextricably tied together.
Yeah, and I think some of that is the form of the book itself. Mm-hmm. You know, because so much of it is epistolary, it's in letters, I think that there's a certain indulgence in some ways that as readers we give to a letter. We sort of assume that it will be, like, that you're going to lean into maybe the poetry of things when you're writing a letter to another person. And why, I think it was such a smart idea because while in, like, non-letter prose, you might be like, oh, this is a lot. In a letter, you're like, oh, no, this completely makes sense because it's such an expression, such a personal expression, and therefore a way in which a voice can come out so cleanly and clearly.
Interesting, because I actually have the opposite experience when reading it, which is that the letters are the more straightforward prose than the third-person passages.
Interesting.
An example, the piece... There are two pieces that hooked me on the first page. The first piece, second line and beginning of third paragraph, blood slicks her hair. She breathes out steam in the last night of this dying world. This was fun, she thinks. Okay, I am on board.
Yeah.
I am on board. And then paragraph four, this is where the prose gets dense and does a whole bunch of world building for us. She holds a corpse that was once a man, her hands gloved in its guts, her fingers clutching its alloy spine. She lets go, and the exoskeleton clatters against rock. Crude technology, ancient, bronze to depleted uranium. He never had a chance. That is the point of red. Okay, you've thrown a bunch of cool technical terms at me, and I'm like, oh, wow, future battlefield, wait. Crude technology? Wait, what?
Yeah.
And now I have, and that's the second hook. The first hook is, that was fun. And the second hook is, how advanced is this? Please world build some more for me.
Right. And I think that was part of what I'm thinking about. And we're going to dive into this way more in the next episode when we're talking about, we're going to do a really close reading about Red's perspective, looking at these first pages. But in general, one of the things that Amal and Max are trying to do in this book is describe this time war, which is technology that we don't have and an understanding of time that we don't have. And so they are using this metaphor, poetic language to to attempt to communicate something to us because we don't have the language for it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that juxtaposition of those two things of like, this is a very highly technical thing that I'm going to attempt to explain to you people who are locked into this single timeline. It makes things really juicy and lovely.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of the main reasons I wanted to pick this. I wanted to pick it both because I deeply love the voice of this book. I find it very affecting and very sort of pleasurable to engage with. But then there are really almost four different voices in this book, mm-hmm. because you have the red sections, you have the blue sections, you have red letters and blue letters. And each of them has a distinctly different voice that is communicating different information and different world building as we go. So one of the reasons I wanted to examine this one is we get to sort of do that contrast between, mm-hmm. okay, what's happening here versus what's happening here versus what's happening here. And so it felt very useful as a teaching tool in addition to one that is just, oh, they are executing this at a very high level.
Yeah,
and it's delightful to engage with.
Let me circle back on that teaching tool briefly. You can pick up two similar books by different authors,
yeah.
and compare voice and ask yourself, you know, why do these sound different? Why do these feel different? Why mm-hmm. do these work differently? And that's valuable. Having that experience in one book where the same narrative, a singular narrative, is being run in multiple voices is utterly invaluable. Mm-hmm. I cannot think of a better teaching tool for voice than reading and rereading and analyzing your own experiences as you soak up the book again and again than this book.
And while this book has a very sort of unique style, it's also something that you can do in books with multiple POVs. Mm-hmm. So if you wanted to take what we're doing in this close reading and apply it somewhere else, you could take a book that has a lot of different points of view and think about how is the voice being done differently by the author from one character to the next.
Yeah. I mean, and this is just an extreme case, which I think is what makes it so useful, right? Of having such distinctly different voices. And it's such a voice-y book, you know? And what I mean by that is they're just leaning so much into that voice as a forward component of it, which in part they can get away with because it's a shorter book, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't overstay its welcome. This might be more difficult to do at great length, but given the compactness of the book and how quick the experience of reading it is, you can really push pretty hard on the voice lever, which they've done in this case.
I have a question that I am going to pose after our break.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Making your mental health a priority is always a challenge, and I think it's easy to not prioritize it, especially when you're trying to figure out how to write a book. I think we have some deep cultural idea that artists should be tortured and depressed to make their best work. But in my experience, struggling to find clarity and motivation will hurt your process a lot more than help it. In my own life, therapy has been essential to figuring out how to navigate an industry seemingly designed to give all of us anxiety. Being able to talk to an expert can help you set better boundaries, find a balance between the demands of your work and your art, and navigate the complexities of being a published writer. That said, finding a therapist is never easy, especially if you're not in a major city like I am. That's where a service like BetterHelp can be of use to help you start the process while you figure out what your needs are for your mental health journey. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/WX today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, .com/WX. Hey, writers. Are you thinking about learning a new language? I think exploring the world, experiencing other cultures, and being able to communicate with people outside your everyday experience lets you create richer, better stories. A great way to do that is with Rosetta Stone, a trusted expert for over 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered. They use an immersive technique which leads to fast language acquisition. It's an intuitive process that helps you really learn to speak, listen, and most of all, think in the language you're trying to learn. They also feature true accent speech recognition technology that gives you feedback on your pronunciation. It's like having a voice coach in your home. Learn at home or on the go with a desktop and mobile app that let you download and access lessons even when you're offline. And it's an amazing value. A lifetime membership gives you access to all 25 languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, German, Japanese, and, of course, Korean. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Writing Excuses listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I want to talk to y'all about Scavenger's Reign, which is one of the best things I saw in 2023. It's an animated series on Max that tells the story of a group of survivors crash-landed on an alien planet after their colony ship malfunctions mid-journey. What makes the show wonderful is its incredible art style, but also its approach to how they portray alien life and how humans interact with it. It's really deeply interested in systems and ecologies, and tells a really beautiful story about how humans interact with their environment and with each other. I really can't recommend it highly enough.
The big question is, if you are but one author, but one mortal author, trying to write multiple voices, as you said, you know, a novel with multiple POVs, can you do it this well?
Well, one thing I want to point out as we go into this close reading series is we're picking these as examples that we hope are instructive. We're not saying you have to do what these authors are doing or replicate these. We're picking examples that are really pushing the boundaries of what is possible in this particular sphere. So this is pushing the boundaries of voice. When we get to Memory Called Empire, that is pushing the boundaries of what you can do with world building. When we get to Fifth Season, that's going to be pushing the boundaries of what you can do with structure. I do not recommend trying to replicate these things. We're showing you big examples so you can take lessons from them and learn from them.
So I'm going to give you a couple of words that we're going to be using as we're going through. As you probably know, I'm an audiobook narrator, and when I'm trying to learn how to do character voice, when I'm teaching it, there's a couple of tools that we use that are very useful for doing voice on the page. So pacing, accent, attitude, and what I call experience. So pacing is kind of the cadence, the rhythms of the voice, where they pause, whether they're doing long sentences, short sentences, where they put the punctuations. And that's something that you manipulate really by punctuation. It's replicating the way we pause in speech. Accent is all about word choice and sentence structure. It's not about pronunciation, which is what a lot of people focus on. So you'll hear us talking about the word choice and sentence structures that are specific to each character. And then attitude is exactly what it sounds like. When you're talking to someone on the phone, and I know that a lot of people never do that anymore, but you can tell, when you're listening to us, you can tell if we're smiling or not smiling mechanically, that's because the shape of our facial mask changes. But really, it's that our attitude is driving the way everything happens. And on the page, you're manipulating that with word choice, sentence structure, and punctuation. And then experience is about how the character views the world. So specifically, when you're hearing us talk about red and blue, you're going to hear us talking about use of botanical metaphors versus use of mechanical metaphors, depending on which character we're talking about. And that comes from their experience. So those are a couple of levers that you can push very consciously without having to like have this extensive acting career. Or in Amal's case, Amal is a poet and is using a lot of additional tools. Mm-hmm. But those are four things that I find very useful.
In, oh gosh, this would have been 40 years ago, I was reading the liner notes. Liner notes must have been on a Billy Joel album. and Billy Joel talked about getting his start, and he said, I listened to things on the radio, and I told myself, I can do that. And that, I wanted to be a rock star for years. And then I got into cartooning and into writing because I looked at things and said, I can do that. And I look at Time War and think, I can't do that. And if you are feeling the same thing, I just want to express some camaraderie. Yep. A little bit of commiseration and a little bit of hopefulness, which is that as we go through these, we want to give you the tools so that on your third or fourth reread of one of these close reads, you begin to tell yourself, oh, I can do that.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't even have to be doing that entire thing. Like, you can't write Time War because that's where the personal voice comes in, their own experience, the thing that drives them. But you can use the tools that they're using in Time War. And that's the piece that we're hoping that you're going to get out of these really close reads, mm-hmm. that here's this tool that you can use and apply to your own personal voice and your own experience, that will come out on the page.
Well, and one thing to keep in mind is also that this is two people, right? Mm-hmm. This is a collaborative project. They're bringing double the firepower to this project. And anybody who's read Amal and Max's work individually knows that those are already some pretty heavy guns that they got. So there's something special that can happen in a collaboration where the sum is even greater than the individual parts. And it's very hard to get to. I don't love collaboration projects, actually. It's one of the grand ironies of this book is I tend to be fairly opposed to them because they're so difficult to do well. But in this case, those two came together in a way that their voices, you know, really braided together in this really powerful way that leads to the reading experience that we have in front of us. Yeah.
So, Erin, you tend to do fairly voicey fiction also when you're writing. What are the things that you think about when you're looking at Time War in kind of relation to the way you approach your own work?
I think I like the way that you broke down sort of the different pacing. I'm going to forget them all now.
Pacing, accent, pacing, attitude, experience.
Pacing, accent, attitude, experience. I really wanted that to be like something I could say. I was like, pie, that's not
no,
really.
No, sorry.
It's okay. But I think that pacing especially, like I love to look at the way in which other folks use punctuation because mm-hmm. like really as mm-hmm. writers, I find us to be a controlling lot. We don't just want you to read it. We want you to read it how we would read it in our own homes. And so thinking about, I wonder if the way I'm reading this is the experience that they intended me to have. Why is in the thing that Howard read earlier, okay, there are some shorter bits in there. There are things that are two-word sentences. Why is this period here? Why not a dash? Mm-hmm. Why was this not a semicolon? Oh, it's because I need to stop all the way here. I like to really think about that because when I'm doing it, I know the effect that I'm going for. Mm-hmm. And what I like to try to do is listen to somebody else and wonder about the effect that they're going for. It's sort of like the listening to the song on the radio and going, I think this song is meant to make me sad. Why and how? Because if I'm writing a song that wants to make somebody sad, I should think about, if I understand how they did it, then I can understand a way that maybe I could do it better. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
One of the arguments that I will occasionally have with copy editors who will never see the argument back. Like the book is never returned to the copy editor with my no. But I'll have things that are phrased like a question, but not have a question mark because they aren't said with a rising tone. And, you know, like, what did you say? Like, what did you say? Like, there's a falling tone there. And if you put a mm-hmm. question mark, it's a very different, what did you say? And that kind of thing, I see early career writers, and I know I did it myself, get hung up on the grammar. Mm-hmm. And having something grammatically correct is not what you're trying to do when you write. Grammar is there for when you need to express clarity in some way, but most of the time what you're looking for is just, do these rhythms flow?
I look at grammar as the rule set that we play by when things are complicated and we need to make sure that everything's working well. And breaking those rules is what we do when we need a new rule in order to communicate something different, and so we will deliberately throw down a word like misunderestimate, which isn't a word, but which we can kind of tell what it means, and away we go. And the copy editor will say, hey, this isn't a word, and you say, but it's my word for this book.
Yeah.
One way I think about voice is that voice is about clarity for the mm-hmm. reader. It's about clarifying the reader's experience of all the information you're trying to give them, right? Because it is the vessel with which that's handed over. And so sometimes the way you achieve that clarity is by breaking grammatical rules, by, you know, using very complicated language or inventing your own words sometimes. Because what you're trying to do is communicate what the emotional experience that you want the reader to have is, right? And so voice is your first interface with them. It's why we're doing this as our first module, is voice is the first and the last thing that you will encounter while reading a book.
Yeah, I also think something else that just occurred to me, a bit of a side note, is that the other thing that I really like to look at is when once you create voice and people understand what that voice is, you have to keep doing the work, but in some ways, you've already established who this person mm-hmm. is, mm-hmm. the way that they talk, the way that they think, and it actually helps to put their voice in the mind of your reader.
Yeah.
Like, one of my favorite English sentences is, I didn't say you got to keep the money, because you can put the emphasis on every single word in that. Like, I didn't say you got to keep the money. I didn't say you, like, and it's a slightly different meaning.
Yeah.
And if you have the voice of the character established, they will emphasize, hopefully, the word that you would emphasize when you were writing it.
Yeah. This is very similar to what happens in audio fiction. There are character voices that I cannot sustain for an entire thing, like the Lushak in the October Day books. I'm talking like this. And I can't do that for an entire page. So I hit it really hard at the beginning, and then I back off and use it for mm-hmm. emphasis where I want to drive home, this is the Lushak speaking. And I find the same thing with when I'm writing, that I will use those embellishments, the sometimes it's just as simple as italics, but sometimes it's like the flourishy words at places where I want to remove ambiguity about who's speaking or what they mean, mm-hmm. or places where I want to add emphasis. It's like, no, this is seriously this person. Mm-hmm.
Well, one last thing I wanted to point out here is, you know, another reason I think this is a great book to use is so much of the character development and plot development is communicated through alterations in voice.
Mm-hmm.
The voice evolves over the course of the book. And as it does, we grow with the writer or the characters, and our understanding of the world that they live in also evolves, right? So we get to sort of see how you can use voice as an active tool in your fiction. Yeah. I think people think about it as kind of a passive set thing, right? In the first paragraph, you set your voice and then it's the same throughout. That ideally is not true. It grows and changes with you. And I think this, again, is a pretty radical example of how you can do that.
Before we jump to our homework, is that what we're getting ready to do next? Before, I would like to send us home with a passage that I think fits beautifully. I am glad to know you love reading. Perhaps you should next write from a library. There's so much I want to recommend.
That's perfect.
That is perfect. And on that note, I have your homework for you this week. So what I would like you to do is to take a sentence from a work you love that has a strong and clear voice. So think about, what are some voicey pieces that you've read that you really enjoy? Take that sentence and write a scene based on that as a prompt. in the same tone and voice as the original. So I'm not trying to get you to replicate the original scene, but take that, take what you love about why it sounds the way it does and try and extend that into your own fiction and make that voice a little bit your own.
This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go write.
Hey, podcast lovers. Did you know that you can upgrade your experience here with our ad-free tier on Patreon? Head over to patreon.com/writingexcuses to enjoy an ad-free oasis, as well as access to our virtual Discord community where you can talk with your fellow writers.
Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. For this episode, your hosts were Mary Robinette Kowal, Dongwon Song, Aaron Roberts, and Howard Taylor. This episode was engineered by Marshall Carr Jr., mastered by Alex Jackson, and produced by Emma Reynolds. For more information, visit writingexcuses.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.